Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage. It's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Saving Silver Produces Real Profit right after this. You know, 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our fathers. It said, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small. And you shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small, but you shall have a perfect and a just weight. A perfect and a just measure shall you have, that your days may be lengthened in the land which the Eternal your God gives you. For all that do such things, and all that do unrighteously, are an abomination unto the Eternal your God." Now, we see that in Deuteronomy 25, verses 13 through 16. Well, you know, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention in 1787 followed that scriptural principle of law when they put into our federal Constitution at Article 1, Section 10, these 17 words. Listen to this. "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debts." Article 1, Section 10. But back in 1933, President Roosevelt took our gold away, and in 1964, President Johnson took silver coin out of circulation, and in place of these just weights and balances, these two presidents introduced our current practice of the first, second, and fifth planks of the Communist Manifesto into our monetary system. They gave us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills and clad coinage in place of silver coins. Well, now, in the intervening 70 years or so, we Americans have gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until today we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our nation? Moses and our founding fathers, or Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? Now, if you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of the many lessons in my business school conducted twice a year here at the law school. Or, if you'd like, you can get it on compact disc and do it at home. To learn more, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package first? That's the place to start. Doesn't cost anything. That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational. It's informative. It's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. You can call and order yours right now. The number's 417-273-4967. Now, the business school is available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to the website georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email. Send an email request for that free general law CD package. That's georgegordon.org. Or call direct 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. All right, last time we were talking about houses. You know, we're in a housing bubble. The housing market is just going bonkers. You can't lose money in real estate, they tell us. Well, I'm an old-timey real estate man. I've been in real estate for many years. I've seen plenty of people go broke in real estate. Yours truly did it once. Now, that's not to say that there isn't money to be made in real estate, but that doesn't include Joe Sixpack buying a house and living in it for 30 years and paying the taxes and the interest and all of the upkeep and insurance and et cetera on the house. And I showed you last time that the average loss, that's the minimum loss. I shouldn't say average. The minimum loss is $90,000 plus. No money to be made buying a house in the suburbs, living the American dream, driving your truck, making your payments. 30 years later, you own the home. That's not a profitable deal. That's a fool's errand. What would happen if we bought silver or gold instead of a house? Would we come out any better? Get your pencils out, boys and girls, and sharpen your pencils on both ends. Get your paper ready. And let me take you through what silver does over the same 30-year period. Now, when you buy a house, you lose $90,000. When you buy the same amount of silver, your capital investment, over 30 years, what would you expect to make in profit off of the silver versus the house? Well, let's take a look. If I buy a $50,000 house and my brother buys $50,000 worth of silver, just taking the same time frame, 1955 to 85, and we'll leave out the big $50 an ounce bubble in 1979, and we'll just carry it forward to 85, when the price went back down to $15 an ounce or so. Who's going to come out better? Well, we saw the $90,000 plus loss that comes from buying a house on a 30-year contract. So let's look at 30 years in silver. 1955. I paid $5,000 on the down payment of a house. 1955, my brother takes the same $5,000 working at Mutual Plywood. We both make $1,000 a month. And he takes $5,000 and he buys silver. Silver dollars. So from 1955 to 1967, that's 13 years of payments at $297 a month times 12 times 13 is $46,332. And the next 17 years is interest. So in order for me to pay off the $50,000 on the house, it takes 13 years. And then you have 17 years of interest. $62,000 worth of interest. Dead loss. You're going to buy one house for yourself and about 1 1/4 houses for the banker. Remember, we went through that last time. Now, remember, my profit was $45,000, which equaled 4 cars. My brother's profit was $500,000. Yeah, that's right, $500,000. Less $50,000. Equals $450,000 profit, upon which he must pay 28% capital gain tax. That's $126,000. That leaves him with $324,000 divided by $11,000 a year, which is the price of automobiles in 1985. That equals 30 cars, which is one car per year, which is exactly what he should have been saving every year from 1955 to 1985. Now remember, I ended up with 4 cars. My brother ends up with 30 cars. Now, the reason we compute this in cars is to show you what the inflationary tax actually costs you. Now from 1960 to 2000, 40 years, the inflation tax ran 4.7% a year. So you had to make 5% on whatever investment you had, compounded annually, for 40 years, in order for you to stand still. Didn't make any money, didn't make a dime. You just saved your purchasing power. If you'd have bought silver or gold, you would have actually made a profit. Now, people have been buying houses for years, and they believe they're making a profit. And in absolute dollars, they are. Remember, you buy a house for $50,000. 30 years later, you sell it for 5 times that, $250,000. But when you subtract out your cost of goods sold and inflation, take a look at your net profit. And then what could you have bought when you started and what can you buy now? You've lost your purchasing power. $90,000 worth of purchasing power. That's what you've lost. Now, when you buy precious metals, you don't lose that. Sometimes you actually make a killing. For instance, if you'd have bought silver in 1955 at $1.29 an ounce, and then sold it at $50 an ounce in 1980, you'd have made a killing. I think it was about 5,000%, wasn't it? Something like that, $1.29 to $50, it's about 5,000%. Now, nobody buys at the bottom and nobody sells at the top. That's the dream that every one of us has. We'd like to buy at the bottom and sell at the top. You want to sell your stocks the day before they start going down. That isn't going to happen. I've never seen that happen. I don't know of anybody that's ever done that. So in the real world, we buy and we sell. And then over the long haul, what is it that makes money? Now, there is a way to make money in houses. Let me describe it to you. If you've got a handy-dandy hand, and if you can build and remodel and do some things, let's try it for a minute. Let me show you what happens. An old buddy of mine bought a five-acre piece of land up in Prairie, Idaho, back about 1980, 83, 85, long in there. Let's just take that 5 years from 80 to 85. Now, Prairie, Idaho is way out in the boondocks. Today, that same piece of property probably cost you $5,000. Probably 10 times as much. But it really doesn't make any difference. The land is a relatively small part of the overall housing investment. But he bought this piece of ground for $500, which is what it was worth in 1980. And he went to work on it. And on the weekends, this is my old buddy Bob, and old Bob was retired from the military, and he got a pension of $1,500 a month. So he took $500 a month. Now, his wife Sue was working, and he got his $1,500. You know, they're doing quite nicely for themselves, but they want to build a house out at Prairie, Idaho, out in the boondocks. So for about 3 years, Bob worked on this house. Now, here are the numbers, and I'll show you where money can be made. Every weekend, Bob would go out to the house, and he would spend $500 a month for 36 months. Just give you a little idea as to how much that is. $500 a month for 36 months is $18,000. And then he just spent it out of his current cash flow. Whatever your cash flow is, you just take that $500 a month for 3 years, 36 months, about $18,000, and Bob built a 1,700 square foot house. Paid cash for all the pieces that went into it. But he did the labor, he and his wife Sue. Now, Bob was a pretty crafty guy, so he'd call me every once in a while, and he'd say, "Hey, George, you want to come up to Prairie and help me work on my house?" We'd go up there Friday night, work on it over the weekend, come back home, go to work on Monday. And so we'd work about, 10, 12 hours and drink a case of beer and eat pretzels and talk and chew the rag and just had a good time. And sometimes he'd get another guy or two to come up there, and you kind of need somebody from time to time, an old buddy of some kind, to come up there and help you raise these roof rafters. There's some heavy work on a house. Now, when you go to hang sheetrock, you'll get pretty crafty. Pretty soon you can hang sheetrock overhead by yourself. Sheetrockers do it all the time. You can take a 4x8 piece of sheetrock, build yourself an A-frame, stick it on the A-frame, stand on the ladder, push it up into place, and nail her right up there. You can learn how to do that. And you can learn how to tape it, and you can learn how to spackle, and you can learn how to cut boards and nail them and frame and do all those things. But there are some heavy-duty things, like raising those roof trusses and fuel odds and ends like that. So here's old Bob. He builds a 1,700-square-foot house in 36 months. Gets better than that. He had to put in a water system, so he put in a ram pump about, probably 300-400 yards from his house in a creek, and takes his water out of the creek and through the ram pump and runs it down to his house. He paid for that. I don't know what that pump cost, but I think it was $500-$600, as I recall. And then he put in a little hydro plant in this same creek. He went up about a quarter of a mile. Now, he had to pipe some water, and he put in this little hydro pump, and that cost him another couple thousand bucks. A couple thousand for that. And then he put in a septic system out there. He just went out there and he put in his own septic system, and I think Nealis had a backhoe, and they went out there and they dug that, and they dug it in, they put it in. It doesn't take you too much to learn how to put in a septic system. So here's old Bob. Now he's got water running in his house. He's got electricity from his own hydro plant, and he's got the house built for $18,000 with these amenities, with a septic system. It gets better. Bob built a little shop during the same 3 years up there, so he'd have a place to put his table saw and cutoff saw and his tools and one thing and another. And as I recall, that thing was about 20 by 24. Pretty good size shop. Built out of rough lumber. Bought the rough lumber up there from Cook's sawmill. And built this house out of rough lumber. Didn't spend a lot of money, you know, with Louisiana Pacific and et cetera. And now he's got the house built and he's got the shop built, but it gets a little better than that. He built a little small barn up there, too. A little small barn. It was probably about 20 by 30, I'd say. Built it out of rough lumber. Same 36-month period. Same help, me and three or four other guys that come up there. I didn't go up every weekend, but, you know, every once a month or so, old George would go up there, and once a month or so, you know, Jim Hill would go up there and so on and give Bob a hand. And I think Jim put his carpet down and probably put his linoleum down. And all right, now, as time progresses along, it gets better than that. See? Now, Bob had a Nomad trailer. You know, one of these little 16-foot Nomad trailers, and that's what he lived in up there while he's building his house. So he'd go up there, and he had a place to sleep and stay out of the mosquitoes, and he built a roof over this Nomad so that it wasn't out in the weather. So Bob built four buildings. He built a roof over the Nomad, small barn, small shop, pretty good size shop, and he built a 1,700-square-foot house, and when he got all through building this, took about 36 months, $500 a month, $18,000, cash out of pocket, he owns this thing free and clear. Free and clear. Not too shabby, huh? Well, for insurance purposes, he wanted to have insurance on it. They had it appraised, and it was worth $60,000. The bank said, well, we think that thing is worth $60,000. He doesn't owe anything to the bank. He owns the house, the land. He owns the hydro plant, the septic system, and the water and the house and the 5 acres. Everything's free and clear. Not a bad deal. But what if Bob decided to sell it for the $60,000? Well, in 1985, interest rates were up around 8%, and had he sold it in 1985 to you, and you would have bought it with $5,000 down, financed $55,000 for 30 years, you'd have paid $180,000 for it. $180,000. You'd be in your 25th year of payments on it. 25th year. And you'd be paying three times what the house sold for. But it's worse than that. The whole thing only cost $18,000 to build. All right, now let's take a look at our profits. Because this is where money's to be made in real estate. You buy something and you fix it up, or you take something and you create it. This is where property and property rights come in, because now you've got real, real property. Now, you know, the average guy goes out and he works. And he produces nothing, collects a paycheck, goes out and buys groceries, and he says, well, gee, I'm just a real productive person. Doing what? Filing papers? Working in a law office someplace, or working in a doctor's office? What do you mean productive? Production is food, clothing, and shelter. Production is motorcycles, automobiles, and gasoline. Production are those things your standard of living depends upon when you're buying and selling. Well, that's where real wealth comes from. Real wealth is where Bob Hallstrom takes 5 acres of ground and builds four buildings on it. He takes land and he creates something that's useful called shelter. An oil driller goes out and he pokes a hole in the ground and he produces something called crude oil, something that's useful. You know, people today work in defense industries and they make radars, you know, and they make stealth airplanes to go out and kill people with, and they call themselves productive. That doesn't add anything to anybody's standard of living. A guard bee in a beehive is a parasite. That's the problem with America. It's full of parasites. instead of producers. Now, Americans used to be producer. Old Bob now is a producer, and he produced $60,000 worth of real wealth with about $20,000. That's what we call two marks. He had two keystones. He doubled his money twice. He took $18,000 and he doubled it twice to $60,000. Now, let's try this. Bob could have sold that place himself, couldn't he? For $60,000 at 8% interest and collected $180,000 over the same 30-year period, couldn't he? Now can you see where the money's at? See, bankers make a lot of money. Bankers make a lot of money. They got nothing invested, and then they collect a lot of interest off of the nothing. This is creating money out of thin air called fractional reserve banking. I told you about this guy Henry, you know, in my high school class. He was in the class of 1957. Now, today he has seven houses, and that's what he did. He went out and built these houses. See, when you go to build a $50,000 house or a $60,000 place, it costs you about half of that. You just figure it's going to cost you about half. If, on the other hand, you do all the labor yourself, you're the guy that gets paid what you would have been paying the carpenters, plumbers, and electricians, and everybody else. The more you can do on this project yourself, the more money you make. Now, that's the trick to making money in real estate. I took a house one time. I paid $14,000 for it, moved into it, and lived in it. Then I remodeled it, and I put on there was a little barn in the back of it, and I converted the little barn into a three-bedroom, one-bath cottage and rented it for $350 a month. That $350 a month would carry the place. I turned around and sold it for $54,000. I think the total amount of material that I put into that project was $6,000. 14.6 is 20. I sold it for 54, and I turned it within 3 years. So my $14,000 doubled to 28. So there's a double mark in that one. Besides that, I lived there free. I didn't have to pay any rent because the tenant was carrying the property. So I got free rent and made the money. Now, I traded that place for three houses on Holmes. I traded the three houses on Holmes when I fixed them for a house and 7 acres in Nampa. Traded the house and 7 acres in Nampa for 13% interest in the federal apartments. Traded the 13% interest in the federal apartments. What we call trading up in real estate. And yeah, there's money to be made. No doubt about it. If you want to learn how to make money, you make money geometrically. You invest a dollar, and then you go out and you buy, sell, and trade with that dollar until you make two. And the sooner you make that two, you know, if it takes you 1 year, that's great. Then you've doubled your money in a year. Remember the little boy? You take a penny and you double it to two. If you did that every year for 32 years, you'd have $40 million. That's the way Donald Trump makes money. That's the way everybody in business makes money. I don't know of anybody that goes out here and invests his money in somebody else's business at 5% interest, like buying stock, and ever made any money at it. That's a fool's errand. All right, let's go back to silver. Let's test this silver thing, because my brother over here made a pretty good killing, or a pretty good profit on silver. My profit was $45,000, which equaled four cars. I lost $90,000, but my brother, when he bought $50,000 worth of silver over the same 13 years from 1955 to 67, has $50,000 invested in the silver, which goes up to $500,000 by 1985. So if you want to make a $1,000 purchase with a 20% tax rate, you must first make $1,250. Can you follow that? I mean, you're out here paying income tax, aren't you? So if you want to pay $1,000 for something, you had to go out and make $1,250 from it. The government takes $250. That leaves you with $1,000. Let's say you're going to buy a car. Now watch what happens. When each person in due course of buying, selling, and trading pays his 20% tax, by the 8th person in the line, the government has made the whole $1,000, and by the 28th person, the government has made nearly all of the $1,250. Remember that $1,250 that you had to earn in the first place? Now, that's a hell of a good deal for the government, but is that a very good deal for us? Now, the income tax is a money loser. You don't make any money doing income tax. And Social Security and income tax take a third of everything that you create and produce. One third. And here's what it pays back. If you're a low-income worker, $5 an hour, minimum wage, for every dollar you pay into Social Security when you retire, you get 68 cents back. So government takes 32 cents out of every tax dollar to administer the program. If you're a blue-collar worker, let's say you're an electrician, plumber, carpenter, mechanic, or something like that, and you're making $20 an hour, you're making your $41,000, your median average wage. For every $2.73 that you pay into Social Security, you get a dollar back. They charge $1.73 per dollar. Did you get that? They charge $1.73 for every dollar they give you back. Do you really need that? Do you really need a safety net like that? Do you really need to get fleeced like that? It gets better. If you're a $38 an hour man, you're making $75,000-$80,000 a year as a real estate broker, a doctor, a dentist, you know, something, some professional. For every $5 you pay in, you get a dollar back. Now, do you people really need that? You people really need a safety net like that? So keep in mind that the income tax is not the way to make money. Social Security is not the way to make money. Now, if you want to stay in income tax and Social Security, you know, don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. Let's take a look at an automobile here for a second. Let me show you something. People go out and they buy new cars. People have been going out for the last 5 years refinancing their houses and getting their mortgage payments reduced. That made pretty good sense. And then they took a bunch of equity out of their houses and went out and bought cars, swimming pools, and all kinds of neat stuff. That's what's been stimulating the economy over the last 5 years. Now watch what happens. You go out here and buy one of these automobiles. One time I was over in Oklahoma City, I was going out and speak to a group of people, and this young fella came out to the airport and picked me up, and as we were driving over to the Holiday Inn where this meeting was to take place, where I was speaking, he said he needed to stop by his house and pick up a few things. So he wheeled off the freeway and drove down a couple of residential streets and stopped. Parked a car in front of this house, and he got out of the car, got on the sidewalk, walked down to the corner, and turned to the right. Now, my wife was in the car, and I said, you know, that's kind of unusual that you park your car here and then walk down to the corner, a couple, three houses, and then turn to the right, and probably goes down another two or three or four houses, I guess, to where he lived. And so a little while later, he comes back, gets in the car, we're driving down the freeway again, and he said, I suppose you're wondering why I parked the car and then walked to my house. And I said to the young fellow, I said, yes, as a matter of fact, that thought had crossed my mind. And he said, well, I've got a little problem. You see, I work for my dad in his construction business, and business has been so bad that my dad had to lay me off. And I haven't worked for about 3 months. And all I've got is my unemployment insurance, and I can't make my car payment. And I'm afraid that they're going to repossess the car. And if they repossess the car with you in town, Mr. Gordon, that would be a problem. And I said, yes, sir, that would be a real problem. So as we were driving down the freeway, I said, well, just to satisfy my own curiosity, if you don't mind, may I ask, how much did you pay for this automobile? And he said, well, I paid $7,000 for this car. I think it was an 83 Oldsmobile, something on that order. 83 Olds. Station wagon. Pretty nice car. Yeah, it was probably 4 or 5 years old, but, you know, still in good condition. And newer car than I was driving. And I said, well, if you don't mind my asking, how much are the payments on this car? And he said, about $350 a month. So he's paying $350 a month on this car. And I said, well, now if you don't mind my asking, could I ask you, well, how long is the payment schedule? And he said, 36 months. And I said, that's pretty standard, 36 months, $350 a month, $7,000, 83 Olds. Let me ask you this, how much did you pay down? He said, $500. $500 down, $350 a month, 36 months, $7,000. Pretty standard deal, isn't it? And I'll bet you a lot of you people out there have cars that you financed in the same way. So let's take a break right here, and we'll come back, and we'll take a look at the answer on when you buy a car. How much does it cost? How many are you buying for the banker? Well, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide on the Internet daily. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it's open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School, 417-273-4967. Again, that phone number, 417-273-4967. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. And one more little caveat here. The opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of the network or of this radio station. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to the website georgegordon.org or call the Law School direct at 417-273-4967. All right. Let's go back to buying an automobile. Got your pencils out, boys and girls. Got them sharpened on both ends. People want to buy an automobile. They go out and they buy an automobile, and they buy it on time. There's one more little thing here that we needed to ask. I said, but if you don't mind, well, what's the interest rate? And he said, 14%. 14% interest. Now, interest is calculated in a number of different ways. When we think of interest, we think that we borrow $100, pay 14%, and pay back $114. When I was in the waterbed business up in Boise, Idaho, I used to sell waterbeds out of a retail store. And we had a pretty good deal in 1979, 80, 81. Do you remember when interest rates hit 20%? Why, we were only charging 12%. 12% interest. Nearly half the going interest rate. Wasn't that just special? We used to finance our products through the associates. The associates, like Beneficial Finance, the associates and other finance companies. And these are called consumer finance companies. They finance your big screen TVs and automobiles and snow machines and snowmobiles and motorcycles and all kinds of neat stuff. So that you people can live the American dream. and we charged 12%. It was 12% add-on. You know what 12% add-on means? Well, depending upon the way we calculate the interest, you know, you can calculate the interest daily, weekly, monthly, or annually. And when you hear some little buzzword, you know, like APR or add-on or, you know, some little thingy over here, that's a little special that we put on, a little special. And when you work out that interest, it works out to be 34% simple interest. So every $100 you borrow, you're paying back $134. Isn't that just special? All right. Now, when you get into credit card purchases and you get into these consumer contract purchases, I mean, you're throwing your money away hand over fist. And they say, well, the poor people are the ones that take it in the shorts. No, they're not. Hell, you people out there that are doctors, dentists, and professionals, and blue-collar workers, you're buying your cars just that way. You're getting screwed, blued, and tattooed. And your credit cards are costing you 15% to 30% interest. And you're getting screwed, blued, and tattooed. And remember, if you just take 5% interest, compounded annually, for 14.7 years, it doubles the principal. So, you know, whether you're buying an automobile or you're buying a big screen TV or some consumer product, you're buying one for you and one for the bank. Now, here's the way this works out. This young fella with his $7,000 note had paid on that note for 16 months. So he paid $350 a month times 16. So let's multiply that up. $350 times 16 months, he'd paid $5,600. Can you see that? $5,600. Now remember, he paid $500 down. That totals $6,100. He had a 67 Chevy Nova, and he traded the Chevy Nova in. They gave him a $500 allowance on the car. By the way, the used car dealer that bought this car and put it on the lot for $7,000, what did he pay for that? Got any idea? He paid $3,500 for it. How do I know that the car dealer paid $3,500 for it? Well, because the used car dealers keystone their markup. So when I go by a used car dealer and I look in the windshield and it says $10,000 for this car, I know that he paid $5,000 for it. Now somebody, you know, says, well, I looked at the sticker in the window, the manufacturer sticker. Oh, woo, that's real intelligent. And who made that manufacturer sticker and put it in the windshield? Or put it in the side. Well, it was the Ford Motor Company. Oh. And then they sold that car to the Ford dealer. And the Ford dealer is going to sell that car and he's going to make just 1 or 2 or 3% interest, 3% profit. Huh? Come on, boys and girls, it's time to grow up and get real. The world's a bad place and the Ford Motor Company puts those stickers in the windows because they're going to sell this $20,000 Ford that you're going to pay $20,000 for. They sold it for $10,000 to the dealer. How much did it cost the Ford company to manufacture the car? It cost them $5,000. They doubled the price to $10,000. The dealer doubles the price to $20,000. Then you go out and finance this car, $20,000, for the next 4 or 5 years, and the Ford Motor Finance Company finances that car on an APR loan and they make 14% interest. Got that? Man, this is a hell of a money-making program, but it's not very good for Joe Sixpack and it's not very good for Sally Housewife. All right. So here's 14% interest. Guy's going to pay this for 36 months, but let's just look at the dollars here. He's already paid $5,600 plus $500. He paid $6,100. Let me ask you a question. If you had 61 $100 bills in your hand and you walked onto a used car lot and you walk up to the salesman and you say, "You see that car over there that's marked $7,000?" And you whip out those 61 Benjis over there and you say, "I will give you those 61 Benjis for that car, and I ain't paying any sales tax. And I ain't paying jack squat for anything else. Take it or leave it." Do you think that that guy's going to let you walk off that lot with the $6,100 in your hand? Now, he bought that car for $3,500. And you walk in there with $6,100, I'll guarantee you he'll sell you that car, and he won't charge any sales tax. Isn't that just special? And if he doesn't, well, then he ain't very hungry. Go down the street and do that in 10 car lots over there, and I'll guarantee you that for the $900 difference, you'll walk out of there with the car. And you'll own the car. But it gets better than that. Shucks, it gets even better than that. What's the worst thing that can happen to this guy? Well, the worst thing that can happen to him is that they come along and they foreclose on the car, take the car, which ultimately they did, and then he's got a deficiency judgment. Now, how much is the deficiency judgment? All right, and watch what happens here. Take the $350 a month and multiply that times 36 months. That's $12,600. So he signed a contract and he said, "I promise to pay you $12,600 for this $3,500 car that I agree to pay you $7,000 for." Now, you and I and anybody else could have gone to the same auto auction that that used car dealer did and paid $3,500 cash and walked out of there with that car. It had already been foreclosed on by the bank. Now, he's got a $12,600 contract for which he's already paid $5,600. Remember? Now, that leaves him with a $7,000 deficiency, doesn't it? So they take the car away from him, and he still has to pay the $7,000. Well, assuming that he gets another job and assuming that, you know, life goes on. All right, gets better than that, though. I said to the young fellow as we were driving down the road approaching the Holiday Inn, I said, "Instead of buying this $7,000 car," I asked him, first of all, I said, "Why did you buy this $7,000 car?" And he said, "Well, we had five children, and my wife and I, when we first got married, we had the 67 Chevy, and that was plenty big enough. But then as the children came along, then the car, the 67 Chevy, got smaller and smaller, and I couldn't get all the kids in it, and we needed a second car, and that one was too small, and so we had to buy a station wagon." And I said, "Well, did you have to buy a $7,000 station wagon, or could you have bought an $800 station wagon?" And he said, "Well, if we buy an $800 station wagon, they're not very reliable, and maybe the transmission would go out of it, or maybe it would break down." Yeah. God, we certainly wouldn't want a transmission to go out, and we certainly wouldn't want to break down, would we? So I said, "Did these five children come upon you suddenly overnight and just overwhelm you, or did they come one at a time?" And he said, "Oh, no, they came one at a time, and they came about every year or two for about, you know, 5, 6, 7 years. And I said, "Uh-huh." Now, at $350 a month, I said, "You made your $350 a month payments for 16 months, right?" Yep. So when you bought the car, you traded in your Chevy, and you made the first payment $350, and the second payment $350, and the third payment $350, right? And he said, "Yeah." "Well, you know, that's $1,050 for 90 days. Did it ever occur to you to save your money for 90 days, or to plan ahead 90 days from now? I've got to buy a new car and save $1,050 and then go out and buy a $1,000 or an $850 station wagon, pay cash for it, and then you'd have a 67 Chevy and you'd have a $1,000 station wagon and you'd have $4,600 in cash over the same 16-month period, wouldn't you?" And he said, "Yeah, I guess I would." And I said, have you ever heard of the auto auction? And he said, yeah. Yeah, I've heard of auto auctions, but you got to have cash. I said, that's right. Now, over the last 16 months, have you saved that $350 a month, every month, for 16 months? You'd have your 67 Chevy, and you'd have a $1,000 station wagon, and you'd have $4,600 in cash that you could go down and pay $3,500 cash for the 1983 Oldsmobile, and you would still have $1,100 left over, wouldn't you? There was a long, pregnant pause. Are you guys starting to get the drift here? In other words, if you want to buy a lot of cars and spend a lot of money so that used car dealers and banks and bankers and Ford Motor Finance can make a lot of money to build skyscrapers, be my guest. I don't want to get in the way of Americans' happiness and success. But little Georgie Gordon doesn't want to do that. So when I go to the auto auction, I walk in the door with a few dollars in cash, and I buy an automobile, and I pay for it, and I own it. Or better yet, I trade for it, or I do something a little craftier. All right, now let's go back here to this silver deal. Remember my brother? You know, silver has gone up in price over the years, and then it's gone down in price over the years. You notice that? It goes up and it goes down. And most people, they say, well, I had a guy over here who was digging a septic system for me here today. Did a good job, and I owed him a little money, and I said, do you want me to pay you today, or you want to come back and do another job for me tomorrow? And he said, well, I'll come back and do another job for you tomorrow, and I'll let you pay me tomorrow. I said, okay. So I got to chit-chatting with this guy a little bit, and I said, do you want me to pay you in gold? You want me to pay you in silver, or do you want me to pay you in paper? He's a young fellow. He's probably 30, 35 years old, maybe. And he said, well, I don't know much about gold and silver. I guess I better take the paper. Notice he didn't say, well, why should I take gold and silver? Had he asked me that, I said, well, because if you worked for 3 hours today at $60 an hour, and in 3 hours, that's $180. And if you have to pay 15% of that in Social Security and 17% of that in income tax, that's going to be about $60, and that's going to leave you with $120. I said, now, that if you come back tomorrow and you work 4 hours, and let's suppose that you got four sixes is $240, and then you got $180 today, that's $420. That's about 1 ounce of gold. And 1 ounce of gold is about $50. And so instead of working for $420 in paper, why don't you work for $50 in gold and then pay your taxes on the $50? We didn't get that far in the conversation because this young fellow's been to college. And this young fellow's a businessman. He makes $60 an hour. God, he makes more money than I do. Because I don't make $60 an hour. Now, the price of gold and silver swings back into equilibrium every now and again, three times in the 20th century, when the price of silver reaches out there to about 100 to 1, you know, when the price of silver is $4.50 an ounce, and the price of gold is about $450 an ounce. That's about 100 to 1, isn't it? Let me just see if that's right. $450 divided by $4.50. Yes, sir. That's 100 to 1. Did you know the price of silver had hit that 100 to 1 three times in the 20th century? Now, let's go back to 1955, because my brother went out and he bought 5,000 silver dollars and put them in a hole in the ground. And then every month, instead of making house payments of $350 a month, he went out there and he bought silver coin and he buried that in a hole in the ground. So that by 1967, 13 years later, my brother, you know, at $300 a month, not $350, now just $300 a month, $3,600 a year for 13 years, you know, he puts $45,000 in a hole in the ground. Now by 1967, he's got $50,000 worth of silver. Now for 17 more years, he hangs on to that silver until 1985, when the price of silver peaks at 50, drops back down to 15. Ooh. Now just multiply that out, and he's got $500,000 worth of silver here. Can you follow that, boys and girls? $500,000 worth. Now, of course, he's got to pay his taxes. He's got to pay the capital gains and one thing. You know what people ask me? They always get kind of insulting. And they say to me, well, you know, where did he live during those 30 years? They don't ask me, well, gee, where did he live for 30 years? They got to get snotty about it. They got to get rude and obnoxious. They got to get stupid. Dumb on purpose. And that's why I don't like telling those people the answer to the riddle. Oftentimes I'll say, oh, I didn't think of that. You know, you're right. You should go out and buy a house. God, that's the smartest move you can make. I can't believe how stupid I am for not buying a house. Now gather around, boys and girls, and let me give you the answer to the riddle here. My brother didn't pay that $62,000 interest, and he didn't pay. Remember the cost of goods sold? $186,000. Remember that? Now, take $186,000, which is the cost of owning and operating this house, this home, for 30 years. So just take $186,000, 186,000, point, divided by 30. Do you know that $62,000? $62,000. Well, it's $6,200 a year. Now remember, you paid $60,000 in interest. Remember that? Just the interest was $60,000. But in addition to that, you had to pay upkeep. You know, you had to put a new roof on the house. You had to put new carpet in the house. You had to put all this stuff in here, and insurance and taxes and all the rest of it. Remember that? Okay. So you have $6,200. Now take $6,200 per year. $62,000. Am I right here? Let me just do this again. I got $186,000. $186,000. 1, 2, 3. Divided by, let's just do it this way. 360 months. It's $516 a month for 360 months. Do you think that for $516 a month we could rent some kind of a pad someplace? In fact, you know, for about $150 a month back in the 1950s, when we're talking about this, you know, you can rent a house. When I first got married in 1964, I paid $50 a month rent. When I moved to Alameda, California, I paid $65 a month rent and rented the upper flat of a house. As rents have risen over the years, you know, over 30 years, when you pay the rent, you put your gold and silver in a hole in the ground, you sit back and wait for that 100-to-1 to move back to 16-to-1. And that's where the money's made. Now, I told you about old Franklin Sanders, didn't I? Remember old Franklin Sanders? I'm going to give you another little tip here. Franklin Sanders wrote a book, Why Silver Will Outperform Gold by 400%, and The Professional Trading Secrets That Will Make the Most of Your Silver and Gold Investments by Franklin Sanders. It's a manual, about 100 pages, 8.5 by 11 pages in here. Say 87 pages, 88 pages, 88 pages. No, it's 89. 89 pages, and I think you can have this for about $200. Now, if you tell him that you heard George Gordon on the air, he gave this to his subscribers for $50, and he said, "If you'll advertise that on the air, I'll let your listeners have it for $50." So you better call Sanders first and ask him if he's going to charge you $200 or if he's going to let you have it for $50. But here's the phone number. It's 888-218-9226. Franklin Sanders. Remember, that's the Money Changer. Money Changer. P.O. Box 178, West Point, Tennessee, 38486. And Sanders has been doing this for years, and so has every gold and silver collector or user that I know that buys and sells on the spread between the price of gold and silver and takes about a 10% profit as the spread moves in the marketplace. Silver and gold makes about 10%. Now, that's a hell of a lot better than the 5% that you were hoping that you were going to get from buying stocks. And if you could succeed in making 5% at stocks, you wouldn't make any profit. And all you're going to make is the inflation. And Sanders wrote a book. Now, I wouldn't take the time to write a manual like this, because every gold and silver broker that I know of, every dealer, everybody that buys and sells it already knows these little tips and tricks in here about how to use gold and silver and make money on it. And all of us need a house. I'm not telling you don't need a house, but if you go out and buy a house, like I described here, and build it yourself, you can build a house, a $50,000 house, for $20,000 or $25,000 and own the thing in 36 months free and clear. Why do you need to pay $300 a month for 360 months, 30 years, on a house, and buy one for yourself and one for the banker, or one and a half for the banker? Why do you need to do that? And if you want to make money, if you just take your same amount of money over 30 years and put it into silver, it will at least maintain its purchasing power. Remember, when you get through with your house, you're gonna spend 30 cars and net 4 or 5. If you buy silver and gold, then you're going to save 30 cars. You're going to get 100 cents on the dollar in purchasing power. And that's where reality is located. So why don't you call Sanders and see if you can get this book here. It's 888-218-9226, Franklin Sanders, and it's the book, Why Silver Will Outperform Gold 400% in the Professional Trading Secrets That'll Make the Most of Your Silver and Gold Investments. And forget about real estate. There's no money in it. All right, now we're out of time. So I'm going to have to close it off right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. Let me give you a couple of pointers here as we leave the air. You've been listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website, that's georgegordon.org. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. Now, for more information, just go to the homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. And also on the website, the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio login schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. And remember, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. And we'll take this up again. So until then, good night, friends.